This is Drew Thornley. I'm reading my June 19, 2009 op-ed from The American called Emissions Control, Myths and Realities. Diplomats from the world's major greenhouse gas emitters met recently at the State Department to discuss a potential UN agreement to fight global warming. Commenting on a lack of attention paid by the Bush administration to the urgent need to address global warming, U.S. Special Envoy for Climate Change Todd Stern said, quote, "They were not fundamentally looking for an international agreement," end quote. Perhaps that is because international efforts have not succeeded thus far. Gwen Prynne of the London School of Economics and Steve Rayner of Oxford University say the Kyoto Protocol, quote, "as an instrument for achieving emissions reductions, has failed. It has produced no demonstrable reductions in emissions or even in anticipated emissions growth," end quote. Meanwhile, the United States is having better luck at controlling its emissions without the multi-billion dollar mandates of Kyoto. According to the United States Energy Information Administration, carbon dioxide emissions from the combustion of fossil fuels increased 0.7% in the United States from 2000 to 2006, far below the worldwide increase of 21.6%. During the same period, emissions grew 4.9% in Europe, 37.6% in the Middle East, and 52.3% in Asia. Major developing nations saw big increases. India, Malaysia, and China's emissions increased 27.7%, 45.8%, and 103% respectively. In 2006, China passed the United States as the world's biggest carbon emitter, and its lead is growing daily. The EIA projects that China's energy-related emissions of carbon dioxide will exceed American emissions by almost 15% in 2010 and by 75% in 2030. In 1990, China and India together accounted for 13% of the world's emissions. In 2005, their contribution was 23%, and in 2030, they are expected to account for 34% of the world's emissions. The best-known U.S. carbon-cutting legislation provides a good idea of just how costly such plans run. America's Climate Security Act, also known as the Lieberman-Warner Bill, called for emission reductions of 63% below the 2005 level by 2050. President Obama's much more ambitious plan is to cut emissions 83% below 2005 levels by 2050. The Environmental Protection Agency projected that Lieberman-Warner could, by 2050, lower GDP by up to 6.9%, increase average gasoline prices by $1.40 per gallon, and raise electricity prices by 26%. Many private economic estimates were considerably higher. Moreover, there is no guarantee of any benefit to the global climate should we adopt and meet the demands of a national or international carbon-cutting plan. Perhaps developed world carbon reductions would lead to marginal reductions in temperature, but would they be worth the economic cost, particularly since developing nations' emissions will easily swamp any American reductions? Some counter that if America will lead, China and others will follow, but we should not delude ourselves into thinking that 80% of the world's population cares more about cutting carbon than joining the ranks of richer industrialized nations. One may take issue with various cost projections, but what is beyond dispute is that laws or regulations that put a high price on carbon will necessarily lead to higher energy prices. Penalizing higher carbon conventional energy sources in favor of lower carbon renewables forces businesses to divert resources to less economically efficient uses. This, in turn, raises the overall cost of producing energy. The result? Less energy and more expensive energy, which ultimately raises consumer prices across a range of goods and services. We have a growing population with growing energy needs. The last thing we should do is implement policies that will reduce the supply of energy. We need more energy, and we need affordable energy. Adopting a carbon-cutting regime a la Kyoto will give us neither.